Welcome to the show tonight. This is Eva Herr, and tonight we have with us Dr. Bruce Lipton, and we're going to talk about his work with epigenetics and cell membranes and how we can change our health with our thoughts. In fact, change our entire reality with our thoughts. How are you, Dr. Lipton? Thanks for being on my show tonight.
Eva, I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for this opportunity to talk to your wonderful audience, people seeking new answers for the new world we must be creating now.
Well, I have to tell you, we were talking just before we got on the phone. I had a massive heart attack last month, and I called out on my radio show and said, whoever out there knows anything about holistic medicine and heart disease, if you're willing to help me, please contact me. I had physicians from all over the world, Jonathan Wright, Ralph Hallsworth, Patricia Kane that does PK protocol. So it was one of these doctors. There's one more. I can't think of his name, but he's in Thailand, but he's an American doctor. Said, thank Bruce Lipton, Eva, because it's thanks to Bruce Lipton that we're now able to do this. So I'm doing all of my heart stuff totally holistically. I'm having great success. I'm using a little bit of allopathic medicine, but just until I get stable. And then we're doing everything holistically. So I'd like for you, if you would, tell us why this happens. Tell us how it happens. Tell us about the importance of cell membranes and keeping those cell membranes healthy and the mitochondria. Tell us what you do.
Okay.
Please.
Well, Eva, I was a conventional medical school professor teaching cell biology, histology, and embryology, the nature of how cells work and how they create us. So it's the basic understanding of life. And when I was doing all that, I was also doing research on stem cells, and this was back 45 years ago. So there were just a few of us in the world that actually even had the concept of what stem cells were. But my research in the lab completely conflicted with the information I was teaching medical students. I was teaching medical students the concept of genetic determinism, belief about how genes program our biology and behavior and stuff like that, so that we're sort of like biochemical robots controlled by genes and that perception. And while I was doing that, I was working with the stem cells, which are the equivalent of embryonic cells in my laboratory, and found out that if I put genetically identical cells in three different petri dishes and just change the environment, and that meant the culture medium, the cells are like fish. They live in an aquarium, so I create a culture medium with all the things they need for life. And then I create just slight differences in three different petri dishes with the culture medium, but they all had genetically identical cells. The significance is that in one dish, the cells form muscle. In a different environment, the cells form bone. And in a third environment, the cells form fat cells. And this is profound because the first thing is this. They were all genetically identical. So the fate of the cell was not determined by the genes. The fate of the cell was determined by the cell's interaction with the environment. Change the environmental information and change the fate of the cell. Take a dish of healthy cells from a good environment, move it to a bad environment, and the cells get sick and they begin to die. If there was such a thing as a cell physician and who looked at my petri dish with all those sick cells in it, they'd say, Bruce, your cells are sick. They need some drugs. And I go, no drugs at all. All you have to do is take the dish from the bad environment, move it back into the good environment, and they instantaneously recover their health again. So the point is very simple. We've been blaming the genes for all of our issues and problems that we face in our biological world, and it turns out the genes don't control any of these things, that it's controlled by the organism's response to the environment. And so as the cells go from one environment to another, they change their genetics and their behavior. And this becomes important if we see ourselves. With the old story, we see ourselves as victims of our heredity, meaning, as far as we know, we didn't pick the genes we came with. We can't change the genes if we don't like what's happening. and the genes control who we are. Victim. I'm a victim because if there's cancer in my family, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, I expect that because of that lineage and heredity that I would be a recipient of genes and express those same things. I'm a victim of, you know, my life is already programmed by these genes. That's the old belief. The new belief says if you change your environment, and more importantly, as we'll talk about, change your perception of the environment, you change your genetic activity. Matter of fact, interesting study recently from Dean Ornish, a wonderful physician researcher in San Francisco. He took a number of prostate cancer patients, split them into two groups, gave one the conventional treatment with, you know, whatever drugs they give them and all that kind of stuff. But he took the second group of prostate patients and he said, no drugs, no medical treatment. What I'm going to do is just help you get a better diet. I'm going to teach you stress reduction techniques. You'll also learn some meditation techniques. And so basically changing diet and response to stress for 90 days. That's how long they did the experiment. They read the genetic readout of the individual before the 90 days and then read their gene activity after 90 days of changing lifestyle. Over 500 genes changed their function and activity by changing lifestyle. And basically, this is the lesson of what this is all about. We have been led to believe we're victims of our biochemistry and our genes. When our bodies, which are like vehicles or cars, break down, we blame the mechanics of the system. The new biology says, well, the body is something mechanical. In fact, it is, you know, like a vehicle. Except that the medical model forgot to include the driver and the influence of the driver on the vehicle in their gene control model because the new science, epigenetics, which here's a very interesting for people not familiar with it. Genetic control simply means control by genes. Epigenetic control is a revolution because the prefix epi means above. So when I say epigenetic control, I'm literally saying control above the genes. And this is the heart of the whole new science. We have in our history and our programming and training perceive ourselves as victims of our genes. And the new biology says, no, your genes are responding to your environment.
Are you there?
Yes.
We had something happen. Sorry.
Okay. And just so the bottom line is the new biology says, we're not victims because we can change our perceptions of the environment and change our environment. And in that case, such as those patients that change their lifestyle, change your genes. And all of a sudden it says, oh, well, I'm not a victim. If I understand, you know, how I'm interacting with the environment, I can change my genes, and therefore I'm the one that's controlling my health and biology, not the genes and the chemistry of my body.
So let me ask you something. When you say environment, what you're really talking about is how we perceive reality and what we put in our mouth?
Environment is everything from the core of our being to the edge of the universe. So all these environmental influences, so there's influences on the physical body and the physical world in which we live, and the significance of nutrition becomes very critical as that part because we're building a machine and this body, and you want to use the best building materials possible, the one that it was built with originally. And so we have to start looking at, oh, my God, what are we doing to the food and all the stuff we put inside our body? Because is this stuff that we're adding a benefit to our existence, or is it now turning out, as we're seeing, a detriment to our health and livelihood because the nutrition is way off base with the food that we eat? So that's one part of it. But then it's also all kinds of influences, the physical planetary influences, also the influences of the other planets in the solar system because they influence the electromagnetic fields of the Earth, and biological bodies are directly connected to those fields. And so the concept of astrology, once or still conventionally deemed as weird, spooky stuff by conventional science, actually, in the understanding of epigenetics, how environment influences biology, now finds a role in human health and human behavior. So the planetary influences are there. And then there's the concept, most importantly, of the mind. The mind is shaping both the internal experiences of our body, and it generates the behavior that manifests the external experiences. And a whole new biology, a new world comes down to it when it says, we have been programmed to perceive ourselves as victims. You know, like the world that is outside of us that control who we are. And this is why we may have great wishes and desires for health and happiness and romance. We have all these great desires. And yet, with all these desires, we have trouble attaining them. And we have been programmed to believe, yeah, because there are forces outside of you, and you can't control them, and they control you. You're a victim. The new
biology. So I have a question here.
Yes.
I've had 5 members in my family. This is a question I'm sure my audience would want to know. I've had 5 members in my family that had this exact same kind of heart attack. Is it a mental thing where we're expecting to have this kind of heart? It's that ventricular heart attack, the Widowmaker heart attack. I'm the only one that didn't die because I changed my life and my food. And
I have a different belief. That's the key right there. You change something and you change your life outcome of that. The problem is this, that what we're beginning to recognize that it's mind over body, and that the mind is programmed, and that the primary programming occurs in the last trimester of pregnancy and the first 7 years of life. There are physiological reasons for this programming, and that's because the brain of that infant is functioning at a vibrational level, EEG, electroencephalograph level, of theta frequency, which is imagination as expressed. So that's why, like, children live in the imaginary and real world simultaneously, because their brain is operating imagination. But the first 7 years, theta is also hypnosis, and we start to learn programs of behavior by observing our parents and our family and our community and see how they respond to the stimuli in the world and how they respond to it. And we, as infants, are recording that in a state of hypnosis. So the relevance is that when we go into the subconscious mind where these programs are, when we play the programs, many of the programs, the fundamental ones about how to deal with life, are not programs that we put in with consciousness. They were just downloaded from other people. So that if there is a pattern of behavior that runs in a family, an infant will record that pattern of behavior in the first 7 years, and it goes into the subconscious mind. And when we engage the subconscious mind, those are the patterns that will play. And this is what science has now recognized is the issue in our lives, is that we have been led to believe that we run our lives with our conscious minds, which is our personal identity, our spirit connection, our source. The conscious mind has our wishes and desires and what we want from life in it. It also has that positive thinking in it. It's that creative stuff. So the conscious mind is us with our wishes and desires. And then I say, and the subconscious mind is a database of programs. And the most fundamental programs, where we learn how to deal with life, were acquired in the first 7 years by observing other people. So that the subconscious mind programs don't represent what you want out of life. They represent the programs that other people gave you, and you respond to them unconsciously. So to emphasize the point, there was a study. They looked at the fate of children who were adopted into families where there's a lineage of cancer. And what they found was this, is that the adopted children would get the same family cancer with the same probability as any of the natural kids in the family. And so basically what was so interesting is the fact that these kids come from totally different genetics. So we've been blaming cancer, for example, on the genetics. Now we find that about 10% of cancer is hereditarily linked. The rest of it is all lifestyle and behavior. So what it shows when those kids are adopted, they come from totally different genetics, get the same family cancer. How? Because they were programmed to respond to life, and the stimuli we get and the behavior we express is pre-programmed, but by other people, and it's their family, as I said at first. So that's why the behaviors of a family are passed from one generation to the next in the same manner, in the sense that genetics is passed from one generation to the next. And yet they're different. The genetics is a physical molecule that's being passed. And behavior is a programming that's being passed. But then you start to recognize a new biology. It's the programming that controls the genes, and then you realize, oh, my God, if I've been programmed to deal with life incorrectly because my parents did and their parents did and their parents did, and yet when I look, well, what was the consequence? Well, they got cancer, and then they got cancer, and then they got cancer. Then you look at your own life and say, if it's genes, oh, my God, I'm going to get the cancer. And then I go, no. It's the behavior. And the significance about that is if you change the behavior, you can stop the degenerative process, actually repair yourself and return to normal again, because the cells, the fate and health of the cells is a complement to the environment. And what that means is this, is that when a cell is unhealthy, it's not inherently unhealthy. A small percentage, okay, in truth, yeah, maybe about 5% of the population can legitimately claim that their health is impacted by negative genes that they received at conception. And they can say, yeah, my life is interfered with by these genes. I go, yeah, that's 5% or less of the population. What I'm emphasizing is the 95% of the population that gets sick, they cannot go back and say, oh, that's because I have bad genes. It now turns out that sickness in that vast majority of the population is almost always associated with lifestyle that is not supporting the biology. And the biology is reflecting a lifestyle that's less than optimal, and the biology is less than optimal. Change the lifestyle, make it more optimal, and the body will become more optimal. So we have to leave behind the vision, I'm a victim of my biology, and own, I've created this, perhaps very much, not with my conscious mind at all, which I would say, no, I don't think you do this with your conscious mind, but
so
it's programmed in.
I have two questions now. The
yes.
First one is, one of the doctors that I'm talking to, and I can't remember if it's the one that referred to you or not, said to me, I can give you a genetic test. And the reason that you have this heart disease is because you were exposed to something, either emotionally or some type of toxicity when you were in utero, or it could have been a family member before you, a great-grandfather or a great-great-grandfather. So she says, if I give you this genetics test, I can tell you which gene that's turned on or off that, and tell you which nutritional thing to use to fix it. Is that true?
Unfortunately, there's an issue with that, and it comes down to this, epigenetics. Epigenetics says, yes, today, you know, on Tuesday, I read my genes, and this is my reading. And I go, that's really great. Then I say, tomorrow, some experience happens in your life, changes the way you live, you know, your life. You had your heart attack, something like that, boom. And I say, today I read your genes, going to be different readout. So when you tell people that these are the genes that they have and these are the genes that are working, you're, again, propagating the notion of you're a victim of these genes. And what the new science says, you're not a victim of the genes. You can change the readout of genes, and you do by what happens in your life. Here, simple point. They look at the genetic readout of identical twins at the moment they're born. And when you read the genetic readout, the interesting as you would expect, the readouts are almost exactly the same. And I go, that's right. But then I say, then you go down let them go for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and then read the genetic readout. And what they found is every year of life, the genetics between two identical twins diverges farther and farther apart from each other, because the genetic readout is not what they were given. It is the consequence of their life experiences. So when two individuals start out identically as identical twins, the nature of their genetic readout is going to dramatically change as they experience their lives. Point, if I told them at the very beginning, both of you have the same gene and you're both going to have this, and they grow up, and it turns out, and this is where the problem with identical twins first started to show up, is how come in so many cases, in almost all cases, one will get cancer and the other one will not be affected. One will have diabetes, the other one will not be affected. One will have whatever disease and the other is not affected. And it's like, well, yeah, but they were identical twins. The answer is, Yeah, but they didn't live identical lives. And since the life experiences adjust the genes, then you start to recognize, oh, wait, my life experiences are influencing my genetic reading. I go, yes, that's the science of epigenetics. And I say, then that means if I consciously change my life experiences, then I am consciously influencing my genetic readout. And I go, absolutely, that's already a given. And why is that important? In a world where everybody's been programmed to be a victim of their genes, this is the most important whole revolution in the world. Why? You can change your genetic readout by how you respond. You do not have to be a victim of lineage, of hereditary characteristics, since most of that is due to the environment and not due to the genes. And we have to.
Another question.
Yes.
Where does that leave the Human Genome Project?
Well, the Human Genome Project, this is what the failure of the Genome Project was all about. The whole idea of it was this. Before they did the Genome Project, they had a vision that every protein in the body, which is a building block of your body, and there are 150,000 of them, every protein is, you have to have a gene to make the protein. The gene is a blueprint. The proteins are the building blocks, and when you assemble your physical body, they're a reflection of the genes being read, okay? Well, the significance of this is that the first thing is they had 150,000 proteins, so when the project started, according to the current belief, they were going to have a minimum of 150,000 genes, at least one for each of the different proteins. When the project results came in, they only found out 21 to 22,000 genes. And it's like, well, wait, they need 150,000. Where's the other 130,000 genes? It's like, no, there's not another 130,000. Then you say, well, what does that mean? It goes, the whole belief system was wrong. That the 150,000 proteins are made out of blueprints that for 21 or 22,000 genes, which the original thought is you only make that number of proteins. It's like, no, you can make 150,000 proteins. Point? The genes are basic blueprints, but the life experiences select the genes, activate the genes, control gene activity, and listen to this. Based on your life experiences, the same gene blueprint in your body, and remember, it's a blueprint to make a protein, based on your life experiences, the same blueprint can create thousands of different versions of proteins from the very same gene. And all of a sudden, so what does it mean? It says, old belief, you are your genes. Now it says, well, you got all these genes, and guess what? You can modify all of the genes by the way you live. And all of a sudden, why is this important? Because when I told you you were a victim of genes, that your heredity controls your life, we unfortunately become irresponsible for a simple reason. It's like, well, if it's going to happen to me, I can't do anything about it, then why do I care? You know, I don't care. And what the new science is, oh, my gosh, completely opposite. We need the responsibility because we are the ones.
So now I have one more question.
Yeah.
I'm starting to take an oral stem cell that called MF3. Have you heard of it?
An oral stem cell?
Yes. It's made from sheep placenta. And since you're the stem cell guy, I wanted to know what you think about that.
Well, from my biological understanding, as I know it at this moment, okay, in regard to cell mechanisms and the processes in the human body, personally, I feel that I don't know if there would be any real direct effect of that. But I certainly would believe that it can engender a wonderful placebo effect and make it work. So did it work because of the actual thing, or did it work because of the placebo? And before you answer that, then realize this. There's billions of dollars of sales every day for things like Prozac, SSRI drugs, these antidepressant drugs. And it turns out they're, in a biochemical laboratory test, they're no different in effectiveness than a sugar pill. And yet, hey, billions of dollars every day. It works for people because that's what it works for. But it doesn't work because there's a chemical connection in what's going on. It works basically on a placebo effect. And then you say, well, then you should throw away all the Prozac. Well, I go, well, for some people, boy, they need that Prozac right now because they need that belief system right now. And I would like to wean them off of that as they get to know what's going on. But you know, you need what you need at the immediate point to start taking care of yourself. And this is the whole issue. So, but is the placebo effect negative? And I go, absolutely not. Placebo effect better than anything. Why? Because there's no side effects.
Right.
It heals exactly what you wanted to heal without bringing in any side effects to it. And does it work? And here's an important fact of science. Up to two-thirds, a minimum of one-third, and up to two-thirds of all healings as a result of medical intervention are strictly due to the placebo effect.
That's mind. Why would you... I don't know if this is going to work or not. I just got it yesterday, but I'm supposed to take two a day, and they came from Switzerland. So why would it not work?
Well, it depends on what you believe about it as well. You know, this is very critical, because if we as a group underestimate the power of belief, then we completely have disempowered who we really are and what we can do on this planet.
Okay,
because
it
basically...
That.
It comes even from quantum physicists. It's all in our consciousness what's happening here. And we've been programmed to perceive ourselves as victims. So even though we're not victims, if that's the program, then we disempower ourselves and we become victims. And what's really important is, why are we victims? How does this whole thing work? You know, it is like, here's the simple nature of how this works, because we talked about the fact I take culture medium, three different versions, put genetically identical cells in them, and I get three different fates. And I say, yeah, that's culture medium in a plastic petri dish affecting cells. And we go, yes. And I go, wait. When you look at yourself in the mirror and you see yourself, you see one single organism called the human being looking back. And then I have to tell you the truth. That is a misperception. Well, you see yourself as a single organism, not only because your eyes can't resolve at microscopic clarity that you're actually made out of 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. When you pull far enough away and you can't see the cells, then it all looks like one giant thing called a human being. But we're 50 trillion cells. They are, as I said, the living entity. Point. The cells in our body are like, our bodies are like skin-covered petri dishes. Inside, I have a culture dish with 50 trillion cells in it. I say, yeah, and what's the fate of the cells? And you say, old belief, genes control them. I go, no, new belief. I change the culture medium, I change the fate of the cells. I go, great. And I say, in the human body, the culture medium is called blood. It feeds 50 trillion cells in your skin-covered petri dish. Point.
That's who it was.
What's that?
So it was Ralph Halsworth, because his expertise is blood viscosity. That's who it was that was talking about you.
Oh, well, this is cool, because the blood is the culture medium. And then I say, yeah, and as we showed in the experiment, when the cells are experience different culture media, they change their genetics and their behavior. And then I go, the cells in your body and your culture dish read the blood. The blood is culture medium. And I say, and the chemical composition of culture medium, which when it changes the fate of cells, the chemical composition of your blood is directly controlled by the brain. The brain is like the chemist, adding hormones and neuropeptides and signaling molecules and adding these things to the culture medium, which then controls the behavior and the genetics. Then the next step is, well, which chemicals should the brain release into the blood? And the answer is, what are you perceiving? For this reason, simple. Same person opens their eyes and sees someone they love. The feeling of love and the perception of love causes the brain to release dopamine, the pleasure hormone, oxytocin, the bonding hormone, vasopressin, a hormone that increases attractiveness. And all these hormones, when you open up your eyes and see someone you love, the brain releases those in the blood. Well, the blood's the culture medium. And when these
chemicals... now my question is, what role does gut play?
The gut is responding to the world by reading the world on the outside and interacting with it. The gut is also responding to the operation of the 50 trillion cells. Our brain is receiving signals from a communication center where 50 trillion cells are reporting how their lives are being affected underneath our skin. Gut is sort of a place where the cells collectively, sort of like the giant internet, and then we get a feeling that then comes into our consciousness, and so it's our body cells, in a sense, communicating with our consciousness, which is our spirit, our personal identity. It's a broadcast from the field. So the cells have a dialogue. We send information to how the cells should work. The cells send information back about their conditions. When the cellular community is happy, We're exuberantly healthy. We're joyous. The world is great. When the inside to interior conditions start to deteriorate a bit, the cells will send information back up to the nervous system in the form of symptoms and emotions to try to tell you whether you're living in harmony or you're not living in harmony. And this information coming from the cells is the equivalent of gauges on the dashboard of a vehicle. If we pay attention to the gauges, we can drive the vehicle safely for a long time. If you ignore the signals on the gauges, you can destroy the vehicle. I say, yeah, but in the body, they're not physical gauges, they're senses. And that's why we have the sensory feedback, and the gut is a big source of that information coming back to us to wake up our consciousness to the cells are trying to tell us something. When we put painkillers in or we do anything to interfere with that communication, you're essentially telling yourselves, I don't care what you have to say, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. And that's why people run into problems when they don't realize their emotions and feelings are chemicals in the body sending information back about the operation of their biological vehicle, their body. And so we haven't
taken the moment to talk about where people can find you and your books, Bruce.
Well, it's just very simple.
Because I know they want to know after hearing everything you've had to say.
Very simple. The whole idea is I have a wonderful website called brucelipton.com. Very simple, brucelipton.com. Lots of written articles, videos, and audios of information about this new biology. I mean, we've been just like tap dancing, touching a few points here and there, but there's a wealth of information freely available on that website about the powerful people that we truly are once we let go of the programming that takes us down.
So it almost scares me to hear what you have to say because I have a 12-year-old boy. And when I was pregnant with him, my oldest son was kidnapped for a year. And so I can imagine the damage that I've done to that child.
Well, it's not. I want to correct this because this is the kind of thing that keeps people from trying to get engaged because we review back and we look and say, the damage I did to that child, let's put it this way, that you didn't do that in the sense that you knew what you were doing because if without any knowledge, then we had no idea what we were doing. If you had knowledge of all this, you would have done something differently. The problem, I wanted to bring this up because other people really need to hear this very clearly because once we start getting into the nature of that we are creating our personal lives and influencing lives through our mind and our behavior, a lot of people, when they review some of their history, they go into like, oh, my God, you know, I feel so, you know, shame, blame, guilt, victim, all these terrible words. And when they do that, it sort of says, okay, I can't deal with this, so I'm not going to just ignore it. And then we're back in the same hole we are. I really want to clear this up for people out there because this has always been the hard part of when we have to learn that we've been responsible for the biology that we experience and influencing others. We have to recognize this. We had no awareness of it, how it worked. We didn't have any idea of what we were doing and how what we were doing were influencing both our genetics and the behavior and genetics of other people because no one explained that to us, so we're like, we have no idea of it. Why that becomes relevant? Later on, we find out, oh, my goodness, I should have done this or I should have done that, and then we start to invoke those negative words, and I go, you can't use shame, victim, guilt, blame, and words of that like for a simple reason. Those words only apply if you know how something works, and with that knowledge, ignore it and do something totally, you know, upside down or detrimental. If you knew how it worked and you knowingly did something detrimental, then those words actually apply. But if we have no knowledge of how it worked and we didn't understand it, nobody explained it to us, and all of a sudden one day we end up with this problem, and then I say, we have personal responsibility, and people go, oh, no. I go, you have personal responsibility, but nobody gave you the information. And if they don't give you the information, then we, all of us collectively, are bumping around trying to create life without understanding that there was a pattern and understanding of how our thoughts and beliefs control all this. And if we had known that, we would not be living the lives that we're living today. But then the most important understanding is this. But we can know that, and we can then change anything that happened in the past because the biology is dynamic. It's always adjusting to our environment.
So how does that affect let's say our great-great-grandparents who were on the, I'm Cherokee, so let's just say they were on the Trail of Tears.
Yes.
Did somebody let them know about it?
They had no idea. They had no idea. Actually, there was an idea about the fact that we've been programmed and disempowered for a long, long time. An example is very simply this. The Jesuits have been boasting for 500 years. Something simple like this. They'd say, give me a child until it's 6 or 7 and will belong to the church for the rest of their lives. Or in more biblical euphemism, they would say, give me a child and I will show you the man. What did they know? They knew that the first 6 or 7 years of your life is programming from outside teachers, and if that they got in control of that programming, it didn't make any difference if your conscious wish and desire was to go one way or another, that you would still end up expressing your subconscious program. And that's why they said, give me that child until it's 6 or 7, which is the opportunity to program it, and it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. They knew that that subconscious program ultimately controls your life. Well, they're not the only ones that knew that. The people in leadership have known that for a long time.
That makes sense to me.
And the issue about that is, well, if we've been misprogrammed, then we've been disempowered. I go, precisely. We have been programmed to be victims from the time of the church where they said that we are not connected to God. That was a program. We bought into, I'm a victim, that I have to buy spirituality. And then today, the same kind of programming encourages the healthcare system that says, you're not able to take care of yourself, we take care of you, and you have to tithe them. And the tithing for the healthcare exceeds what the church was charging. And both of them have taken away an innate, normal power that humans have to be connected to spirit and to be healthy through living a life in harmony and balance with nature, a programming that told us how powerful we are and how we control our lives, which was programming from thousands of years ago. But once people knew that they could control you through the programming, then we lost our powers. And the wake-up call that this planet is experiencing right now, this is an upheaval. People are beginning to realize they are more powerful than the limitations they've been programmed to believe in. And so, this means we're becoming more conscious and more powerful.
So I've got two questions for you, and we've got about 15 minutes.
Yes.
I'm just going to ask them, then I'm going to let you talk the way you want to talk.
Okay.
Know that I just wrote a book on consciousness called Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
This interview may be a part of my next book called Bridging the Gap Between Allopathic Medicine and the New Medicine of Functional Medicine or something like that. Okay? So your answers are so important to me. The first question is, are you telling us that we have free will, but then again that we don't have free will? We have free will to make choices, but we don't have free will to that. We have free will to how we're going to react to something, but there's a few of us, that 5%, that it's just going to happen to. Then my next question is, it's not really a question, but what have we left out that you want the audience to know?
Okay.
What have we left out that's important that you want them to know?
Okay, first question about free will versus are we programmed? And the answer is yes and yes. And the reason for that is the following. It's the mind that interfaces the environment, and it's the perceptions of the mind that control the chemistry released by the brain. So the mind reads environmental information, adjusts the biology with chemistry to survive and complement the environment in which they live. So we're adjusting our biology to this environment, okay? And then I say, well, the mind has two parts, and this is where the whole thing falls apart for most people. And it goes like this. There's the conscious mind, the latest addition of the brain, a lobe of the brain right behind your forehead called the prefrontal cortex. And the rest of the brain actually represents the subconscious brain. It was there before consciousness, so the consciousness was a later addition, that part behind our forehead. But the differences, there are two profound differences in regard to them in this, that they work in different manners and they learn differently. And here's what the differences are. The conscious mind, the latest edition of the brain, is the part where our uniqueness comes from, our personal identity, our connection to source or spirit, whatever you want to say there. That's where we are individuals. The subconscious mind is really just like a video recorder, a tape recorder, a machine that takes experiences and records them, and then when you push the button, we'll play them back. So the subconscious mind is sort of a record playback device. It's not good or bad based on that. The good or bad is based on the programs you put into the recording device. So people say subconscious is bad, and I go, no, subconscious is a machine. The programming might be bad. So here's the difference, and this is where the problems come from our lives, and it goes like this. Conscious mind is you, the thinking mind, the one that has wishes, desires, aspirations, positive thinking. That's the conscious mind. That's what you want out of life, and it's very creative. And it also, and this is the key that we have to catch, is it's not time-bound. The conscious mind, Eva, I said, what are you doing next week? And your mind can shift into the future. I said, Eva, what are you doing last week? And your mind shifts back into the past. Or I say, in your head, imagine, and your mind shifts upstairs into your head. And the conscious mind is moving around. Well, the problem is the conscious mind can control the immediate moment, but it's always moving around in thought. And so the conscious mind, which has our wishes and desires and what we want of life, out of life, neuroscientists have now recognized that it only works 5% of the time. 5% of the day, we're using our conscious mind to move toward our wishes and desires and what we want, health, happiness, etc. The reason why it's only 5% of the day is 95% of the time our mind is flipping back and forth in thoughts and places and going everywhere, and it's not paying attention. Point. When the conscious mind's not paying attention, all of the behavior is then taken over by the subconscious mind. So we're almost like robotics, and it's easy to do. I mean, you learn how to drive a car, you don't have to think about driving a car. It's automatic now. You walk, you don't think about walking, you just walk. And the point about the subconscious mind is that it beautifully plays these programs, and it's a million times more powerful an information processor than the conscious mind. So when you leave a behavior to be controlled by the subconscious mind, recognize this. It's pretty damn smart. It can handle a lot of the programs based on experiences. Okay, so now, point. 5% of the day, your conscious mind is guiding you to your destination of wishes and desires. 95% of the day, the subconscious mind is working because the conscious mind is flipping around. And I go, yeah, but here's the catch. The subconscious mind, the fundamental programs in the subconscious mind are downloaded by observing others during the first 7 years of our lives. So the significance is simply this, that the fundamental programs in the subconscious mind are not of our creation. They were downloaded and unconsciously and hypnotically put into the subconscious mind in the first 7 years of our lives by observing other people and listening to their beliefs, and then they become our subconscious beliefs. Significance is...
So how do we... Like you said, I feel so guilty for what I've done to my little boy.
Well, you can't be guilty, because if you knew what we were talking about and you did it, then you could be guilty. If you don't know what you're talking about, it's like, oh, my goodness, what do we do? And I say, well, first of all, guilty and all that, that's irrelevant. What we do is we can change all the programming. So all of a sudden, that becomes the key. The key is this. We can rewrite the subconscious programs, because basically it says 95% of the day you're operating with other people's behaviors and you don't see it. And the reason you don't see it, simple, because the conscious mind's thinking about something. It's not paying attention to what's going on. So whatever you're doing, when your mind is flipping from one thought to another, you don't see it. And then that, all of a sudden you don't realize. But if 70% or more of those programs are negative, as psychologists tell us, then by definition, 70% of the day, of that 95%, 70% of that are programs that are going to disempower you and sabotage you. That's the programming that's in there. And then here's the most important point. Just for example, what would happen instead of operating my life 5% of the day with my conscious mind, if I could operate it 95% of the day with my conscious mind instead of 5%? And then I tell people, almost everybody at some time in their life has actually done that with the most amazing results that blew their mind. And I say, when did that happen? I say, it happened when we fell in love with somebody, when we had that big love hive that may have lasted days, a week, a month, you know, if you're lucky, a year, something I refer to as the honeymoon. And I say, what was unique about the honeymoon? I say, no matter how life sucked up until you met this person, the moment you met this person, you were catapulted into a different world experience. You were in love. You were healthy. You had energy flowing out of you. Life was so beautiful, you couldn't wait for the next day to have more. What happened? Well, the life may have sucked up to that moment. Then you created heaven on earth. And the emphasis is you created that. And how did it happen? And this is where science now has revealed the connection. It said, when you fall in love, it's the one time in your life where you keep your conscious mind present at the current moment and don't let it wander for a simple reason. When you're in love like that, everything you wanted is right in front of your face. Why would you let your mind wander anyway? So
that's
your conscious
exactly
mind.
That's exactly what Brenda Dunn at Princeton says. She says it in different words.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what she said. When the you and the me get confused and there's only the one of us, that's when you really know that you're really here and present. That's kind of what she said.
Yeah, and that's when both people are using their conscious minds full time. And I say, well, why is that important? That's the mind that had wishes and desires and aspirations. So when two people, in a period of that honeymoon experience, don't default to the subconscious program, but strictly operate from their conscious wishes and desires, then of course they collectively created heaven on earth. And I say, then how come the honeymoon goes away at some point? And the answer is, because if life gets busy and the conscious mind has to wander, then it detaches from the current moment, goes into thought, and all of a sudden we start playing those programs that we got in our subconscious, which are the limiting, disempowering, self-sabotaging programs. And guess what? When we introduce those behaviors into a relationship that was just two conscious minds, now four minds, two conscious minds and two pre-programmed subconscious minds, the subconscious program sabotages the honeymoon and it's over with you. You step back into the program. And the fact is, well, wait a minute. I created heaven on earth when I didn't have the program. I'm going, exactly. Once you are operating from your wishes and desires, you create health, happiness, and heaven on earth. And that is why you fell in love and what happened when you fell in love. But when the subconscious programs kick back in because life is busy and the conscious mind travels, the default kicks in and we start playing those programs that other people downloaded into us, we sabotage our existence on this planet. And it's very interesting because there's a movie called The Matrix. And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, that's a science fiction movie. And I go, you know what? It isn't. It's a documentary. Because the whole movie was about what? We've been programmed and that we manifest the program. If the program is a program that weakens us, tells us we're going to get sick, it's a program that says, oh, you're going to end up with a cancer or whatever. If that's the program, then we manifest the program because that's the nature of the biology. And that's why when we step outside of the program, we experience heaven on earth, but that's when you fell in love. And unfortunately, we resort back to the default when life gets busy. But the whole point of the exercise was you already created heaven on earth when you were free of the program. If you want heaven on earth, you have to realize I have to go back and rewrite those subconscious limitations, because they're the things that are preventing me from knowing what I already experienced, and that was heaven on earth.
So we've got 5 minutes. Choose what you want to talk about. You can talk about all of your books and where to find them. You can talk about something else that's important. What is one thing? What is the most important thing? What's the magic button? When I was young, before I went through my shift, I used to say, what is the magic button to get out of the misery?
To get out of the misery is to become mindful, to recognize that if I keep my conscious mind, if I do the exercise, keep my conscious mind present, that means every decision I make is a decision based on my wishes and desires, knowing that when my conscious mind is not present, my actions are controlled by these other programs. That's number one. Number two is that there are ways to change the programs, which on my website there's a section on resources which talk about belief change, and they're very important. And that becomes important because it says we must reprogram ourselves to live in the world we want to live in, not live in the world that other people have created. because we will manifest that program in our world if that's what we've been programmed with. So you could just as easily manifest health as disease, but it depends on what you've been programmed to believe. So, and since we've been programmed to be victims, that's why we're suffering all the time, and yet we're so powerful. We don't know it because we're limited by the belief that we can't do something.
Do you think that we live in a virtual reality and that in a holographic environment, and that visualization makes a difference in the reality that we create in our lives?
Absolutely. I never believed in that kind of concept until the biology that I saw and the mechanism of how environmental information leads to alteration of genes, and understanding that mechanism also revealed to me that my personal identity, your personal identity, everybody's personal identity is actually a broadcast in the environment, and our cells have antennas tuned to each of our identities, and no two people share the same antennas, and that's why we can't interchange our parts, our cells, and organs and stuff. Each person has on their cells an antenna tuned to a unique environmental frequency, which is us and not somebody else. And when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, we're not even in these biological bodies. We're essentially stepping into a virtual reality suit. And the power of it is this, is that when you're in a body, you can take thoughts and turn them into reality as we know it. In other words, when you're out of body in your spirit, it's like a dream world. You can think of all these things. But when you get a chance to jump into the body, you can take those thoughts and images and desires and wishes and actually convert them into a physical expression, which represents our life on this planet. And that's why the most important understanding is that we were actually delivered to a planet that was a Garden of Eden, and the programming we have has destroyed ourselves and the garden. And the wake-up call is that we're facing an evolution, and this is what's happening in the world right now. And it's also very important for people to recognize that the upheaval that they're experiencing is very positive, because we must change the way we're living on the planet. We're destroying ourselves with our old belief systems, and
just one or two more minutes. I want you to tell my listeners one more time that you were speaking from a science perspective. You were not speaking from a religious perspective.
No, God, no, I'm not a religious person at all. the way I look at it, personally, the way I look at it, religion is the business of spirit. You know, it controls and sells and handles spirit like a commodity.
So this is a step that you've actually proven in science. You're not just...
To myself, yes, I can show you where your identity is picked up on your cells by a specific set of antennas called self-receptors. Interesting name, self-receptors, receivers of self. We study a number of them in medicine, because when you want to transplant an organ from one person to another, you have to look at the self-receptors on the recipient and the donor, and match as many of these receptors, like a giant combination lock. If you can match a large number of these receptors, then an organ from a donor will not be aggressively rejected. If there's too much of a difference between the identity of the two cells in regard to self-receptors, the immune system will immediately eliminate the foreign cells. So you just can't implant any organ into another person. You really have to find out if the self-receptors of the donor have a significant complementarity to the self-receptors of the recipient.
So is that why some, and I know we're going to run short of time here, but is that why some people who, say, get a heart transplant or a liver transplant suddenly have, they may like shrimp and hated it before, now they like brunettes. Is that why?
Eva, the best story is this one. A young girl received a heart from another girl. Immediately after she got the heart, she started getting these very vivid nightmares where she was being killed. And it was repetitive over and over again. So the doctors said, okay, they went back in the records and found out that indeed the heart came from a girl that was murdered. And when the police interviewed the recipient of that heart and have her describe the nightmare being murdered, there was so much detail in there that they actually used that to catch the murderer.
Really?
Yes. And this is such a wonderful understanding about it, because basically it says, well, she received the heart from somebody else. Her body cells have her antennas attuned to her identity, but her heart now has antennas tuned to somebody else's identity. So she's a biological body that's receiving
two identities. That's
amazing.
Is there research on that? I'd love to find that.
There's several books on heart changing and the consequence of life changing on heart transplants. There are several books on that are very interesting. I have a reference in my biology of belief book, but it's it's very interesting.
Well, listen, thanks so much for taking the time to come on my show. I'm grateful. I'm sorry that I got it confused today, but
Eva, everything is so cool. Everything works that way it's supposed to work out, and that's why we let go of things and go, oh, okay, everything's working, and no stress.
Guy.
No stress, because stress is bad.
You're such a great guy. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to talk to your wonderful audience. Thank you very much.
And by the way, I'm going to have a second show coming up soon, and I plan on using this on my second show. It's going to be on a completely different network, so it'll be twice the audience.
Just the opportunity to speak to those cultural creatives creating a new world, I enjoyed that opportunity. So thank you again, Eva.
Thank you, and have a good evening.
Thanks.